Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Witches Anonymous with Ilaria Baldwin
and Michelle Campbell-Mason, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Welcome back, witches.
We are so excited this week. This week we have a fantastic guest. She has been on The Young and the Restless for 16 years, playing a character that causes nothing but chaos and is a 2-time Emmy winner. And she's here to talk about something extremely important and raw. Michelle Stafford, thank you so much for joining our coven today.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
All right, so I'm so excited that you're here for so many millions of reasons that we're going to get into. But I'm curious, especially because I've done surrogacy with one of my children, and we'll get into that later. But we've been talking in our podcast and everywhere about Jennifer Aniston this week, right? And how everybody is, you know, coming to the realization that we poked at this poor woman for so long,
decades,
about what she looks. Is she pregnant? Is she not pregnant? Why isn't she pregnant? Is she struggling getting pregnant? Does she not want to have children? And women, we are so, you know, we're considered to be breeders in many ways. And this is me who has 7 kids, but I understand that the historical connection of woman is breeder. And if you cannot breed in the traditional way, or you do not want to breed in the traditional way, people think that they have the right to talk about it. And then for you to understand that you did surrogacy not so long ago, your children are young, but things have changed even the past couple of years in terms of how we talk about it. So, and the technology has changed. The medicine has changed. So as much as you're comfortable opening up to us about it, I'm so curious to hear about your experience and hear about how you felt that was accepted or not accepted.
You know, it's interesting because the breeder thing does hit a nerve with me. It's sort of innate in, I wish it weren't, but it seems to be very, very much a true statement. I was out of a failed relationship, and I had this realization that, oh my God, I was waiting for him. Like, we wait for them to ask us to marry them. You know, we right. wait for them. We wait for them to be okay. He was a hockey player, right? And he had the kind of schedule where it was, you know, that being an athlete's a very, very grueling kind of life, and especially for the wives or the girlfriends. And so anyway, I got out of that relationship, and it was, you know, like, I guess 3 years, 2.5 years. And I thought, I'm 38, 39. I have waited again for someone to choose me. And so I wanted to have children. I thought, okay, I'll do it on my own. I started with adoption. It was abysmal for me. It was a completely abysmal experience for me. It's not for others, but it was for me. And you know, then I just thought, how hard could this be? I mean, I'll just get sperm. Just
find it on the street.
Little turkey baster. You'll be good.
Yeah. On the sign.
There's sperm, how hard is that? There's sperm, I'll do it on my own, right? And then that, it was horrendous. I had a lot of physical issues. Long story short, I did IVF, you know, it just brought me to the point where I had to have a surrogate. I really, and especially at that time, oh my gosh. I mean, just the shame that I could cry right now. I was just like, I must be the biggest loser on the planet. Now, I know this is all bullshit, right? And as a woman, you tell your friend, no, don't think that about your, but I did. It just is what it was. And I mean, the whole time I just felt like a loser. I'm like, essentially, it's not what you're doing, but I felt like even with adoption, I got to buy this girl's baby. Like, I'm such a loser. I can't make this happen. Because all you're told, and you must understand this, I think that somebody who hasn't gone through it might be judging me, and it's okay, judge me, I don't care. But it's you're just constantly told you're old.
So old. And there's a magic line of being old.
Pregnancy. So dark.
Yeah. I just felt like this old, dried up, barren vagina. I mean, can I just talk about sitting in that doctor since you both did IVF? I assume you did, having a surrogate, obviously. Don't know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I remember sitting in, and I would come from work and I'd be all dolled up and I'd sit in that office. And it was couples, and I could just see, like, the women were jacked because I was so jacked doing this. They're jacked. It's, you know, you're amping up those hormones. You're making all those eggs. I mean, you are like bursting estrogen. And the man, I just remember all the men were like this. And the nurse one time opened up the thing and said, Mr. Smith, we're going to need a sample.
I know. Oh my God.
And he's like, okay.
Yeah, no, it's the most embarrassing thing. And they get the sample on the same day that you go in. I guess at least that's the way we did it. You go in for the egg retrieval. Usually. And so I'm like literally in surgery. And Alec is having to go to some really awkward room. He was like, this is...
They call that like a fresh collection
something.
Oh, my God,
exactly.
So it's all just...
So it's
fresh sperm.
Fresh sperm.
That's brought your amazing podcast just into the gutter.
No, this is the best because nobody talks about this. And I remember the pain. I mean, it was like what? For me, it was like 10 days of injections, which I don't know how. I don't know what it was like, because again, because every single year, hopefully they're getting better at it. But these injections.
It usually averages around 2 weeks.
Okay, so it's like slightly under 2 weeks. And then they do like the one that you have to then go in the next day or something like that. The trigger shot, I think they call it. And I just remember, I mean, for me who's had my body had so many kids as well, this weird sensation of your ovaries, like as you call it, jacked, like just huge, is such an odd feeling that with all the odd feelings that have come with all my pregnancies and the ones that I've lost and everything, it's awful feeling. It's an awful, awful feeling. So one of the things that people will say that when you do IVF is other than, oh my gosh, how shameful, she can't have babies on her own, right? They shame us for doing it. But then also, you know, the surrogacy route that they, you know, basically say, oh, that's the easy way to have babies. And anyone who's done IVF, egg retrieval, any of it, it is not easy. It is painful.
Yeah.
That's an understatement. Yeah.
The whole thing, I mean, I've never had someone say that to me, by the way. Oh, that you did, you had a surrogate that was easy. I get other weird stuff, you know, and I even forget what it is because I usually think that those people are idiots who judge. But surrogacy, what you were saying, it was early. I mean, oh God, I just remember when my daughter was born in 2009, they didn't have a room for me. I'm not the insured, even though I was paying out of pocket for the insurance, right? And so my beautiful surrogate, Noelle, I still know both my surrogates, and she wouldn't mind me saying her name, but she got the room, and then they put me in the hallway. So I was essentially with my kid in the hallway. And then at the time, because the way it is, at least in California, is at 6 months gestation, you go in front of a judge. Now they do it all with paperwork, but you go in front of a judge and he says, okay, you are not the mother of this baby, to the surrogate. You are the mother of this baby. But prior to that, she is considered in the eyes of the law, the mother of the baby. And I remember that my judge, and this is probably the depth of pathos that I felt, the judge did not, because it's his opinion, the judge's opinion, because there's no law. So he had everyone who was a single parent or a same-sex parent or a transgender parent, he had everyone who was in that basically adopt their own kid, their own biological kid. And I remember, I mean, having already gone through everything that I went through, which is more than any other mother I know. Like, I clearly wanted this. This is why I cry. I'm so sorry. But so I sat there and I had to basically pitch myself, and I had to get a lawyer to pitch myself to the judge. It was, I mean, listen, way worse things can happen in the world and in your life, and we've seen them, and I've experienced other things after this. But I remember that moment of being pitched to the lawyer, to the judge, whether I was illegitimate or not. And he looked at me. Yeah, he looked at me and he goes, "Now, why do you think you would be a good mother?" All I wanted to say was, "Go fuck yourself." That's all I wanted to say. He's not a judge here anymore. He retired.
Well, but it's humiliating. And that's the thing, is that, having been able to do both sides of it, in terms of these two sides, I mean, obviously there's many different ways to become a parent. But I don't have a difference between my daughter that was born via surrogacy and my six other children that I carried. There's no difference.
Yes.
Yeah. And people assume that I'm less of a mom, that she's less of my daughter. And you know, I mean, just like what you just, you know, shared with us, if somebody questioning your authenticity as your child's mom. And, you know, I mean, we were looking through some articles that were written about my daughter and me when she was born in February 2021. And they were really mean. They were really, really, really mean. And you just look and you think, they're written by women, by the way. Other women are writing them.
Yeah.
And they're basically putting me as this outcasted person, sort of saying like, "Oh my God, she did that. And not only did she do that, but she has kids on her own." And they don't know my story because I have yet to share it with people. And one of the reasons I didn't share it with people was because they were not very nice about it, you know? And so but the feeling, it made me so sad, the feeling of judgment and on such innocence. I mean, the bond between parent and child is so beautiful. And she's just as attached to me as all my other ones. She is just, and I always think, you know what? If she sees at 25 years old, if she sees one of these reporters that took the time to write about her validity, not just as part of the family, but also her validity in terms of existing, they're questioning whether I should have done that, which therefore is questioning whether she should exist. I look at that and I think, what if she runs into you and you think, you know what? I wrote something that you shouldn't be here.
I mean, listen, I just got to sit with
kind of speechless. Yeah.
All right. That's deep.
It is horrendous. She's used as a case study for really being, you know, the unattainable supermom in this instance. And it's such an unfair projection because there's so many elements that go into what the public perceives. And there's so many fake things that go on to social media, right? We put up our most beautiful moments of our life, but Hilaria shows her whole life all the time. But this myopic view that this particular reporter took really just zoomed in on this one thing, saying the rest of it is irrelevant and this part of her life is too shiny and it makes others feel bad and they can't stop watching it, but that's her fault.
Which I wonder about because this was February 2021, and in, you know, 2019 I had two public miscarriages that I was very open about and I cried about that. then people, you know, most people were so wonderful and supportive and shared their own experiences, because infertility is very, very common, unfortunately. So I'd love to take a little time to talk about surrogacy. I love that you are, you know, open with the name of your surrogate. I keep mine private for her.
Well, only because she's open with it.
Right. No, exactly. And that's, and I get that. And I'm not, just for you guys listening, I'm not going to say the name of my surrogate, because that is not what she wants. But I also have this amazing relationship. We talk, like we text at least almost every single day.
That's amazing.
And we're so close, and we go through such an amazing, we went through such amazing transformations together. And so I'd love to talk a little bit about what the surrogacy experience was for you. I actually texted her last night and asked her some things that she would like to share. Just because hearing from a surrogate actually made me want to go through with the process, whereas what I thought surrogacy was going to be made me not want to do it.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I worked very, very hard to not have a surrogate. And I was told by my very first IVF doctor that I would probably have to do it. And I worked really, really hard. I mean, that to me was the ultimate loserdom. at the time, of course, I don't have those thoughts now, but at the time I thought, I'm going to have to buy somebody's uterus. What, I say this in the most crude way, because that's how I felt at the time.
These are unfiltered, raw emotions. Nobody's going to.
Yeah, completely. And, I called an agency, and thank goodness for this woman at this agency that I used, because she had by the time you go to get a surrogate, you're pretty much toast. Like, you've tried everything. Right. And you go, okay. So, I had my embryos frozen, and because, you know, my doctor kept on telling me I was old and I better get those eggs out of there, because she started to go into labor very early. Right. And so she was in and out of the hospital, and she lived, about an hour flight from me. And we had people who worked with the hospital who didn't even get it, and they would come in, and the amount of women who would go, is it weird carrying a white woman's baby? Now, I had that added factor of her being, a different color than me, and the amount of people saying that to her, or we would be somewhere at the mall together and they'd go, oh, your baby. And she'd go, oh, well, it's hers. I'm carrying it for her. And they'd be like, not understand. And I just figure, it's sort of, I compared it to uncomfortable Thanksgivings with family, when you have the creepy Uncle Charlie in the corner and you're trying to avoid him at Thanksgiving. I mean, that was just the whole experience. But nobody, when I finally talked about it, and, I'm on a soap, I don't have the same notoriety as you do. I people felt bad for me. I think they, because it was really... horrendous, and my whole journey was, and it's so many people didn't know about it, and so if they felt weird, it was behind my back and it wasn't to my face. But I always didn't, there's also this, I don't know if you experienced this, but my surrogate gained only 5 pounds during gestation with Natalia, so of course I was freaking out. She essentially lost body weight, right? Which, now, and it's that, I only bring that up because it's the lack of control you have over something that is your, like, that really, really screwed with my mind. Yeah. Like, and I had to talk myself off the ledge. I didn't have a husband I was doing this with. I had family members, really good friends. But it was really hard, and no one understood it, because I didn't know anyone as a single woman who was doing this. Now more people are doing it. But it was really, really hard. It was like something that only you know about, that no one can experience. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I definitely feel the giving up control, although I have to say that also, when you carry a baby, you're giving up control too, so when I was pregnant with Carmen, and I was getting like these crazy implantation cramps, and I literally thought that I was going to start bleeding every single time I got them. And so I'd run to the bathroom and I was like not bleeding. I'm like, how is it possible that you feel these like period like cramps? And there's no blood. What is going on? So I called my mother and I was like, I hate this. This is unfair. Like, I want to write a strongly worded letter to whoever created this in nature. And she's like, Ilaria, get ready for an entire lifetime of not being able to control your children. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, what have I signed? I'm like 6 weeks in. What have I signed up for? I don't know if I'm built for this. But, when I had some chemical pregnancies scattered until, baby number four. And then I got pregnant. I got pregnant naturally in the spring of 2019. So before my fourth kid was one, because I've had them all back to back. And the heartbeat was wrong, was not good from the moment that we heard it. And I had, I'm a Capricorn, as I've said before. I'm pretty stoic in some ways. So I was like, okay, I haven't had a miscarriage after a heartbeat. So I have four kids. They say one in five children ends in miscarriage. So this is it. I was also told that I was old because then I was 35, you know, because I just turned in January and this was in the spring. So I was 35 and change. And we waited until the heartbeat stopped, which was probably about like 9+ weeks. So I went from week 6 to week 9. Going, you know, every few days or so and watching the heartbeat get slower and slower and slower. I was very open about it. I actually went on the Today Show and I talked about it because one of the things that frustrates me from not just being in the public eye, but just being in the community is that we don't often talk about things as they're going on. And that's sometimes when we need the support the most. We just kind of close it off. And so I was very open about that. I had a DNC to remove the pregnancy. And then I decided for many different reasons that I was going to try IVF for the first time. And when we talked about how that's quite a thing, the egg retrieval, sensations that I'd never felt before, just in terms of the heaviness in my ovaries. And we were successful with it. And then I started that entire summer of 2019, I was taking hormones and doing the whole preparation that, you know, we all know here that is to transfer the embryo. And then at the late summer, I transferred the embryo and I'm doing my own shots. I learned to do it in my back because, like, can you guys just like have like a...
It's empowering.
Well, let's have just a moment of levity of imagining Alec Baldwin trying to shove a needle in my butt. I think that would have been and we've dealt with a lot together. That would have been the end of our relationship for sure. But it was intense. Then right before the heartbeat, I started having this crazy, crazy cramping and a lot of bleeding. And this was like right before you could see the heartbeat. And we were sure that I was miscarrying. We were sure. And I was thinking, I was like, I've come so far.
Yeah.
You know, all of the shots, all of the pills, all the suppositories, the patches, you know, my bruised butt, my bruised belly. And then this happened. I had this miraculous thing where I bled for 2 days. It was very physically painful. And they told me blood with pain isn't good. So it's not good news. And then I went and there was a heartbeat. And I was like, oh my God, there's a heartbeat. And I was so excited. And they said, you know what? It's just there's a like a clot and that was what it was. So it's going to be okay. Then I decide also to be like, you know what? Fuck this whole thing that you have to wait till you're 3 months when I'm feeling sick and I'm feeling this and I'm feeling that. I'm just going to tell everybody because that's my thing now is just tell everybody everything so everybody can leave me alone to be open and show, you know, the reality of it, which now we see that this New York Times reporter missed the point, right? I told my daughter, and it was a girl, and so I said to my daughter, I said, you're gonna get your sister. We have all our boys and we love our boys, and I'm such a boy mom. But she really wanted another sister. She has an older sister. Yeah. And then I went for my 16-week appointment, and I'm gonna start to cry. I'm laying there and I had this weird feeling because I couldn't feel the baby and I can usually feel the baby very early on. I couldn't with my first, but my other ones, I can feel them super early on where people tell me that I'm making it up. And I promise you I'm not. And she puts the wand on my belly and the baby's not moving. She was dead.
And did you say 16 weeks?
Oof. And I start to scream. I called Alec, who was on a bus. He was on a public bus at the time. And I just didn't know what to do. They said it was late in the day. I wiped the cream off my belly. I go and I had to talk to the doctor because this was the tech that I'm very close with. You know, she's scanned all my babies. And I went and talked to the doctor and he told me again, well, you're old. But just know that you didn't do anything wrong. They always want to tell you, you didn't do anything wrong, but you are old. And wow, what bad luck. You had 2 miscarriages in a row. And this one with IVF, you know, you would think. And then I walked like many, 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 many blocks. And I just was crying and walking many blocks. I get home and I needed to tell people right away. That was my feeling because I couldn't handle people congratulating me. And people would write me all the time congratulating me. And so I told Carmen, I told my daughter, who is so, I mean, I hope that it wasn't throwing too much on her plate, but she had to just know the truth. And she was asking me, how's my sister? Where's my pictures of my sister? And then I took the video that I put on my social media of me crying. And yes, it was, you know, very emotional, but it is what it is. And I just wanted people to know that I didn't want them to say, I'm so happy for you, because I was not happy.
Right.
And I could not believe how many tears can come out of you. And then you fall asleep, and then you wake up and you remember that it's true. And I had a belly. And then so I had to get something called a D&E, which basically your body feels like you had a baby afterwards. So my milk came in. I had my postpartum hair loss. And anyway, I did that. Now, fast forward to a month and a half later, I get pregnant naturally. And why am I still crying? Because, you know, but
no, it's very emotional.
It was very emotional. It was very confusing. Yeah. And then I had this embryo, this other embryo. And I said, I can't have any more kids. Ha, ha, ha. Now I had another one. Obviously, I have no idea. I have no crystal ball. But I can't have another. My body can't handle any more. I'm going to have this baby. What am I going to do with this embryo? And I feel like if I put her inside of me, it's going to be a death sentence. I was sure that the same thing would happen, that, you know, you lose control, what we were talking about before, that I was going to put her, and I was going to try to house her just like I housed the babies that I conceived naturally. And I was going to kill her, basically. And because me women, we put so much weight on our ability to bring life, and then we take all of the responsibility on us. And so I met with a friend who had done surrogacy, and they had tried very hard to have kids. And she connected me with the woman who carried her children, who then connected me to this whole amazing world. And I was very not sure about it. I was very not sure. I met an amazing woman who is our surrogate, they said to me, this is what surrogacy is like. You have your grandmother's recipe of your cake. You make your cake. Your oven is either occupied or it's not working. And so you go to your neighbor's house, and the neighbor cooks the cake for you. And then the neighbor gives the cake back to you because it's your cake. It's not your neighbor's cake. And that, I mean, it's such a silly thing, but it made so
analogy.
It was made a really good point, because I was asking, well, how are you going to feel about, you know, carrying a baby and then giving a baby? I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could do that. But you realize that the women that do this are angels. They are like the nurses in the hospital that just come and will hold on to you and hold on to your baby. And, you know, my surrogate says, and this is what she does. She loves it. She is passionate about it. She says, I get to make families for a living. I get to make love. And in a different way of making love, I like to make this entire loving relationship for you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that she is so inspiring to me. And, you know, I mean, had the people who judged me so much, if they knew all of the reasons why, and that's the whole thing, is that you shouldn't have to. Just don't judge about things that you don't know about. And how my Marilu, who is the one born via surrogacy, her story starts with, you know, the loss that I had. You know, and the her coming here, there is a connection between those two souls.
But, you know, I think this show is all about, right, like sisterhood, right? Like how it takes a village and women being there for each other. Obviously, surrogacy is a modern, you know, gift to us. And this was not an option for generations past. But at the same time, this is another ability for women to show up and hold space and really help one another. Granted, it is a paid job, unless, you know, there are people that just volunteer to do it for others. But it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And just honoring that and honoring them and seeing them as like the beautiful givers they are for providing such an amazing service that so many of us don't understand. You know, if we look at the numbers here, like, at least like in 2021, like the most conclusive stats on infertility in the US, like more than 35% of Americans have a very hard time conceiving. It takes years. It takes almost 8 cycles of IVF on average for a woman to get pregnant. So there's so much that goes into it. It's such a factory. It's such a business. It's very dehumanizing, very demoralizing, because you are just a part of this machine to make a baby, and you don't get the opportunity to cry like you do, to have that moment, because they're just pushing you through the machine to the end, right? And the process is daunting. I've done it 3 times and I have no children. You know, it's just, it is painful, and every part of your body and your mind changes during the process, and there really isn't an outlet. So I think too, something we should talk about when we are concluding this conversation is, you know, real support for women that are going through this, and how we can kind of put on our website, like how you can find some outreach networks in which you can have these conversations so you don't feel alone, because a huge amount of the population goes through this. And I think a lot of women ascribe their validity as a woman to the motherhood paradigm, being yes. able to be a mother. Yes. And that is so harrowing, because that's not defining of who you are, your character, what you can offer to the world. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful bonus, but we're all so vulnerable to it. I know, since I still really want children and don't have them, I walk around, I live, you know, in a very baby centric neighborhood in New York. And there have been days where I just walk by all these little playgroups and start crying. It's so deeply ingrained in us, and we don't get to talk about how much it hurts, because you're never on the right side of it, it seems. And I'm fortunate to be a step parent as well, but there is the biological tie to parenting where that doesn't count. Right. And well, so it doesn't there's a
count
judgment
maybe in the eye
of to people that are.
I know that's
people's perception. Right. You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. I just want everybody at home to know what you mean too.
Totally. And a lack of control that you have. And like there are all the gray areas that you cannot cross. There's red tape everywhere. And it's such a beautiful experience as well, and such an honor to be able to be there for children and also provide them at that outlet that is also a friend and not just a parent, because there is a different level of authority that comes with that in some dynamics. But it's, you know, you always have to clarify, because then someone thinks you're being, you know, dishonest, like, oh, I have kids, I have stepkids. They're like, oh, right. You know, it's different. That's hard too.
Who does that? I mean, it's so rude.
We're gonna
wrap soon, but I think one of the takeaways from here is people are going through something that you don't know anything about. There's that quote that I completely just butchered right now, but we all know which one it is. And you know, being a parent or not being a parent, or trying to be a parent and having it not work out, it's not a competition. It's not a competition. This isn't this person against this person against that person. It is purely the love that I have. Am I giving it to another being? Am I learning to give it to myself? Am I giving it to a partner? Am I giving it out to the world and taking care of everybody, or being a positive force rather than a negative force out there? And I'm really grateful that you came on and talked about this, because it gave me an opportunity to speak about my experience for the first time. The other thing is we put such weight into physical suffering for women and motherhood. And we think, oh, if you didn't physically suffer to have this child in the way that I think physical suffering is, therefore we question it.
Right. We did.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
and of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we do we do something on which is anonymous called what are we coveting in your coven, and which means basically it's just like a favorite thing that we share. So like a product or a book or an experience or
something we love that we're not really connected to,
but
that's
just,
like inspiring us.
I do have something. I thought okay, I'll do it because it's not connected. There are things that I'm connected to. But this is really weird. See, on my show, if I don't have a little color, I can look. Oh, you know these? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Big time.
Yeah, I can come off on my show because there's a lot of blue in our lighting. So look at these. These are like tan towels. And I do this on my face and it doesn't make me break out. I do it on my face and I just do it on my arms. And they're little tan towels and they're so easy.
Oh, I love that. That's a good one.
It's so good. And mine's so basic and weird, but... Ilaria and I have a very close friend who also does our hair, and it's been a really long time since I've seen him, and I've just been trying to like keep it together and make my hair look decent lately and like messy and witchy and not so like styled. Anyway, going through a renaissance over here. So it's these little silky hair ties where I can like tie them up and it gets all like scrunchy and mermaidy and doesn't ever leave like a dent. It's that Silk brand.
By who?
I guess I tore it. I know the brand's called Silk and they're like these little silk scrunchy things.
Okay.
The tie fell off. It usually just says Silk on it, but so good.
Do you have to do it in like a bun rather than just a ponytail in order to not make
it? So I do it when I work out and I like spray like wave spray and then I like twist it and then like put it over the back and then it comes out pretty decent. I don't know.
Oh, I love that.
Right, well,
since you guys went, I'll do mine now too. So mine is Ilia. It's this really like wide lipstick, but you can actually also use it for your cheeks. I'm super crazy about the preservatives that I put on my skin because they do make me break out. This color is called At Last, and I like it because you can put it on your lips, you can put it on your cheeks and blend it in. I'm not, you know, I'm not a huge makeup wearer, so it just gives you like a little something, unless somebody else is doing my makeup, and then I'm happy to put it on. And Michelle, thank you so much for being with us. This was, for me, a completely life-changing conversation to be able to open up in this way.
I love that you did. I feel really honored that you trusted me enough to do that. And thank you for having me, both of you.
Thank you for your candor and making this conversation, which can be so difficult, really open and safe. And also we can find some light in it because there is some comedy in how hard we have to fight some of the battles to, you know, to get where we want to get with being a mother. Yeah. So
it's all comedy.
It's really fantastic.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.